This part of the Banking with Life podcast episode that you're about to enjoy is freely available, as it always has been. The full episode is available to our clients at bankingwithlife.com and to Ryan's clients at griggscapitalstrategies.com. In this episode, Ryan and I talk about how capital is the core of financial strategy and the peace of mind that comes with being properly capitalized. We had fun. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethering.
I'm your co-host, Ryan Griggs.
I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy you are here this morning, sir. How have you been?
Good. Been a little minute, huh? When was the last time? I think our last co-hosted episode, did it come out in 25? Did it come out in January? And it had been a few weeks before that, huh?
Yeah, no, I think it's the end of 2024.
Oh, okay.
No, it's been a minute.
Oh, it's been a while.
So...
Well, it's been a busy start to the year, you know, redoing the website, adding a whole login capability to create a whole separate platform to provide all sorts of things. So total website redo. I have a dissertation to finish this year. And then the calendar has been full with
We're still clients. Waiting to be able to buy your book, sir.
Yeah.
I mean, no so pressure. I'm just saying that's part of the work. I mean, I get it, you know, the...
We had to add, I mean, it's been a whole education, you know, we've beaten a dead horse before, but I'm like hesitant to announce anything ever again for this reason, but
right.
I mean, it does exist. It is coming. The books are printed. It's really right now just being able to accept payment and handle distribution, which requires the e-commerce functionality on the website.
Yep.
So I've blown clear through 2, 3, 4 different expected, hoped for, sales launch times, but it's coming.
it's worth the wait. You know, I mean, I've said it many times, different places. I mean, that your book, How to Buy Whole Life Insurance, is the companion book to, in my opinion, to becoming your own banker. And I mean that. So, and I get the, you know, the hesitancy to announce something, right? Like you're talking about what are you going to call your section? We call ours Learning Center on the website. Where
it's just going to be the platform. I played around with like whether to name it something, and it's just the platform. You log into it at the website, griggscapitalstrategies.com.
Right. Well, the idea of being able to log in and have access to something is not an easy task.
Right. No.
You know, it's like we have a Learning Center you have to log into. It's a bit laborious. And talking about the time frame to put together what you'd like that's aesthetically pleasing, functional, not laborious. I mean, yeah. It's a bit of a work. You know, it takes time. So
we've been working on this. My web person has been working on this since November of 24.
Yep.
Early November.
Yep.
So here we are in late January. So everything takes longer than I think it should, but maybe
I have empathy for you.
My problem.
But it's like we've been working on ours, and I'm not trying to one-up you. I mean, we've been working on ours for like 2 years. You do something and change web designers or back-end people, and it's just, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It takes what it takes.
What will happen, I mean, the ultimate idea is that clients are going to receive a unique set of material. That, you know, just a library. There's stuff that we've said that's recorded but not been distributed. There's things that, you know, I've written that is sitting, you know, on my drive, just doing nothing. There's other things I want to do. We were talking about one just this morning. And you got to have a platform in place to put all that. That's long-term oriented. And
well, let's talk about that because we speak and talk regularly, but and we've talked about an awful lot of things and that could be done or should be done. I believe they should be done. And oh my gosh, when they are done and having access to it, just to be able to, I mean, it would be extremely powerful. It doesn't exist anywhere.
Yeah. Well, here's the challenge. I mean, the challenge is the same sort of challenge that we face is what people listening will face, right? The Lone Ranger kind of deal, you know, surrounded by the noise.
Yep.
And just like the person listening or watching encounters all sorts of material online, people talking, you know, putting the letters I, B, and C together. Maybe they say they stand for different things now, or they use the word banking, you know, in the context of life insurance.
Yeah.
And it's hard to differentiate, okay, what is genuine IBC-style financial education versus what is, I think as one of your AV guys called it, Justin, click farming, right? Which one's which? How do you know? How can you tell? And, and then for us as agents, as people who want to educate, who view IBC as a financial philosophy, there's countless distractions with, you know, this group or that group putting out this or that project that it's hard to distinguish. Like, is this just another type of click farming type of activity, sales oriented, marketing oriented type of activity? Or is this genuine bona fide financial education? And almost always the solution is to ignore all of what else is out there, come back to the source, and in particular, Nelson, and think about, okay, what would need to be done to advance his particular message? And what sorts of things that haven't been done, that could be done, would advance and complement, not replace, not substitute, but complement and support what he was teaching? And that kind of question leads to a whole new set of, well, then I, as the person who wants to do that, you have to go and create and imagine all of these different types of things that would support that goal. Just like if someone's wants to implement IBC and is thinking about how IBC is going to work in their life. I mean, you can get caught up in some click funnel on velocity banking. God, I hear that term all the time. You know, they got a big whiteboard and they're going to find the money. You know, just put these numbers over here, and completely skipping over the reformulation of the mindset, right? The being willing to, like the Nelson, you say, the fish are the last to notice the water. You know, swimming in this ocean of systematic undercapitalization. I mean, that's why this whole, I generously call it creative insurance design. It's not that creative. They're just taking what the life insurance companies say you can do at the limit.
Wait, what? Don't skip over that, please. I don't want to interrupt you or change your train of thought. But what do you mean by that? It's not just creative life insurance design.
Yeah, because the companies, all companies have certain restrictions or limitations as to what the agent can prepare on an illustration or instruct the home office staff to prepare in the illustration, and oftentimes, especially for those outlets where IBC is all about squishing the base premium down to nothing and blowing up the PUA as big as possible early on, they have this approach of saying, oh, this is I came up with this clever policy design. No, you just took what the insurance company that you happen to be contracted with said is allowable in the limit.
And you've gone to the limit.
Yeah, and you say, oh, this is what, and it's always, you know, the companies might say your PUA rider premium can be X multiple of the base premium in the first, right, early on, not forever, but early on, you know, you can submit that. Or they might say that the term rider death benefit can be a certain multiple of the base death benefit. And so they say, oh, well, we'll just do that. And then, oh, it's creative. It's like, no, you just read the manual and you're taking what the company says is allowable to the extreme and presenting that as a creative thing to do. It's like, so it's not really that creative. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, this is exactly. It's the exploitation by the agent or the advisor of a particular company's guidelines and product limitations. So the company creates the product, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they all say, oh, you know, we want to provide our product series, but what the consumer wants. It's like, okay, you can couch it however you want. then they have guidelines, and they have their guidelines for reasons, right? They want to control the inflow of premium, limit the death benefit at natural mortality. There's so much that goes on. Talk about the seen and the unseen. And so when an agent, and I'm under the belief that most agents can't really build illustrations that are beyond the very simplistic, you know, here I'm solving for death benefit or I'm solving for premium, mm-hmm. right? But then when you get in there and kick around, maybe you get paid on a case or two and it's like, oh my gosh, now my attention goes up. Then you go in there and you really exploit the software.
Yes.
And going to the limits is what you're doing. And then calling it good and couching it, you know, with IBC or Nelson Nash's name or banking blah, whatever. It's like, so, which, okay, great. You know, you learned how to run some software.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, why? Mm-hmm. Why? Just for the point of manipulating the software, right? Mastering that software. And it kind of goes back, and I've said it, I listened to a talk that I delivered at NNI in 2024. And I typically mm-hmm. don't listen. You know, I've listened to a couple of things lately. I'll listen to you when you go, you know, deep on particular points that, you know, I'll go back and listen to that. But it's very hard for me to listen to myself, right? But I went back and listened to this just recently, the other day or two, and I'm thinking, my gosh, that's good. In light of what I see that goes on in the big wide world, what you see, and we see things, you know, within the footprint and within the industry that the general public doesn't really have the opportunity to see. Nor would they necessarily care to see. I don't know. But, you know, someone's circumstances, a prospective client or a client, their circumstances do not change the fundamental principles of the infinite banking concept, right? So for me as an agent or advisor to go in there and manipulate the software to the point where I'm literally delivering to the client who's typically very unaware, a product, I'm delivering a product to them or an illustration, right, that they can say yes to for whatever reason. You know, it's got the right death benefit that, or it's got the high cash value in year one. There are consequences because of improper structure. And I know the broad terminology, properly structured. I get it, it's very broad. And I think it means different things to different people who use that terminology, right? And my point here is, just because I can manipulate the software to deliver something that the client will say yes to, but doesn't understand the long-term ramifications of that.
Right.
You know, it's like, what's right about that? What is right about that? That is no better than replacing existing policies that shouldn't be replaced.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thanks for
and you get
betting that out a little bit.
Like, you get kind of like curious or humorous little implications, right? Like, okay, well, if your creative design approach is dependent upon what the company restricts, well, as it turns out, there are different companies and the different companies have different restrictions. And some, the lesser known companies, not the big four, will let you go to an even greater extreme. So like even if you took the idea that it was a good thing to squish the base premium close to zero as possible and blow up the PUA and, you know, preserve the non-MEC status on the illustration for now, even if that was just a positive strategic goal, there would be that strategic goal would imply a different approach. Like you would then want to evaluate the range of companies in terms of that goal.
Yes.
Which, well, that gets skipped right over.
It must be skipped right over.
Yeah. Because you could end up with, I mean, you can go less than 10% of the total outlay to base. You can get the PUA up higher early on with a particular set of companies. But that people don't ever hear about that because that middle step of, okay, well, given a goal, let's now evaluate the options in terms of that goal. That doesn't ever happen because it wasn't the whole structure wasn't the point in the first place, right? It was never the point to specify a strategic goal and then approach the marketplace with that goal in mind and evaluate the options in terms of that goal. Because that would imply that this is a part of a broader financial strategy, which hopefully would be nested in terms of a broader financial philosophy. But those layers aren't there. And so it ends up commodified, which is, so, I mean, story it, of America.
It's, you know, the goal is, I mean, that's very, I mean, that's so fundamental. And so if the goal is to get this higher cash value per se, right, as an example, and rightly so, as you've pointed out, well, there's a lot of companies that can really get beyond this 10%, 15%, right? And so that's not even truly the goal.
Right.
Right. It's not even honest, forthright goal. We can say that because, you know, I write for this company, I write for this company, and I know how to manipulate, and I'm not necessarily saying it in a bad way. They've mastered the ability to manipulate the life insurance company software, and so they're serving themselves. Even though the goal is to get cash on cash, whatever, at a particular point in time, when other companies that they don't necessarily represent or write for can make that happen sooner, what's really the honest goal, right? Well, I think, and you know, the honest goal is to get paid. Where if the goal was to embrace a broader financial strategy, a long-term capital strategy that you can do so many things with, it's like, and that goal applied to an individual circumstance, an individual, their family, their goals, their needs, where they're at, then the choice of products and companies to best suit, which I believe is a proper goal, what is best for the client, takes a lot of that off. I mean, it just takes it off the table. That's a proper goal, which changes the outcome.
Yes. The purpose informs the outcome.
Should.
And when you but when you've truncated that, when you camouflage the purpose, or when you don't make it explicit, then we get this technique obsession.
Yes.
Right, which is very common, like in economics, just dwelling on the technique, you know, the manipulation of the software, mastering the software. It becomes all about the technique in order to achieve what is always some quantitative specification, right? Maximum early cash value over premium as early as possible. It's always some quantitative, and bigger is always better, right? That's why Miss America's 500 pounds, as you like to say. But it becomes unanchored, right? The technique obsession is unanchored, segregated from the purpose. And it's that is exactly the same pattern in the rest of conventional finance, where there is no grounding core focus from the get-go. There's just this array of products that have been engineered for ever finer niche purposes. You know, there's a tax there's a section of the IRS code for every possible freaking use of capital you could imagine, right? And it all becomes specific. You know, I think of like the 529 education expense. Like, well, why are you going to pigeonhole the use of capital for educational purposes? And of course, come to find out there's all limits on that, right? I had clients who came that, you know, one of them had a 529 and she wanted to change who the beneficiary of it was, like to use money instead of for her own. She wanted to use it for her kids' tuition. Well, then there's a cap, 10 grand a year. Okay, you want to go, that's all you're going to spend on your kid is 10 grand a year to educate them? Okay, I mean, and then it's something. But if you abstracted from the emphasis on the technique and the particular product and recognize it in more fundamental terms as just another need for capital, and then solve for that need, then the rest of these little niche technique obsessed particularities become kind of irrelevant. I mean, it's like, you know, Jordan Peterson talks a lot about the neuroscience of perception and how like all of our action is fundamentally purpose driven. You know, when you see a cup, it's not like you don't see the, you know, your neurological system doesn't see a collection of atoms, you know, organized in a particular way. You don't see like the chemical makeup or the technological makeup of the object. You see a thing that holds liquid. You know, you see something that is related to your action. You know, if the cup is, you know, like a stainless steel cup is just meant to hold liquid, but then somebody breaks in and I need to defend myself. Well, maybe now this is a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, the purpose,
that's a great point.
The purpose affects the perception. And if the purpose isn't explicit from the beginning, if you're just floating purposeless with no purpose, then how do you orient yourself? There is, in some sense, there is no orientation. And that's what that sea of like purposeless chaos becomes, a vacuum that the quantitative stuff fills. Right? Well, maybe I can then throw in numbers. Some are bigger than others and it's money, so more is better. And we're all present oriented, so more is better now. Well, then, okay, that I can grab that. You know, I can go for that. And it serves as like a cheap substitute for a more thorough, methodical, articulate purpose. And it's just, okay, so bringing it back to where this whole—
That was very good. I mean, that's right on.
It all lines up, right?
Yep.
So to bring it back to like, okay, well, what should we be doing? What should I be doing? What should you be doing? And it's like, well, how about, you know, a page by page, line by line, paragraph by paragraph, extended commentary. You know, there's 92 pages in here. So I don't know, is that a 92 part course? You know, is it a—
It'd be longer.
It'd be long. But that's the kind of good work, you know? That's
yes.
Like the—
Yeah, yeah.
And then you say, oh, well, yeah, that should exist. And well, why doesn't it exist? Well, all the reasons we just talked about, that's why it doesn't exist, you know?
That's just one.
That's one thing
that we've talked about many times. I mean, we talk about things that should exist, and why they should exist, and why they don't exist. And two, to be clear, and I'm just sharing, you know, so you may have a broader perspective, if you wish. We discuss often the why, and I'm not trying to get into the how and the why and get lost in all that, but really the purpose. You know, why should you, you know, fly across the country, take time out of your busy schedule, you know, all the work that you have in front of you, your family, your friend, whatever, you know, the things that you enjoy in life, why should you take your time, pay your own expenses, fly across the country and deliver a talk that took all of your previous years of experience? I mean, and you're a great writer and a speaker, so it maybe wouldn't take you as much time to prepare, but you can't deliver and prepare what you don't have. So you can't, you know, discount all of your experience that goes into that present. And then it's a limited time. You know, it's not like a deeper, broader, in my opinion, more valuable work that you just, you know, shared. All right. Why should you do that? Why should you go? And then to try to help educate or get people to encourage them to expand their thinking when half of them in the room probably don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just one little example of things that we talk about is the why. And that's an example of the why. You know, why should, you know, you create an event and have all the speakers and different topics and, you know, underwrite the whole thing and invite people to it that, you know, most of them would want to be there, I would think. But excuse me. I mean, why? Just for a one-day event? Just for a one-hour talk? just so you could sell a book, just so we could, you know, promote a website or whatever. It's like, that's all a hard hell no.
Right.
You know, what is the real why, right? I mean.
And grounding in the purpose, it's peaceful and relieving. And, you know, I mentioned, we talked yesterday on the phone about a new potential client, we'll see, but, the guy's paying attention. Not the most, maybe socially challenged to some degree, but married, has a business, makes money.
Successful. I mean,
existing in the world, you know, doesn't talk and think like what people would say is like the normal person, but who cares? He's doing it his way and has made a way. Okay, but he's not real comfortable in typically extraordinarily awkward conversations with financial people. So he had a haphazard relationship with somebody who called themselves an accountant, and he had been put through the ringer by a Universal Life salesperson and wasn't paying it as close of attention as he would have liked to IRS filings. And so just goes through this horrible, literally traumatic experience. Plus he's got, you know, he's dealing with financial corporations because his business involves health insurance. And so he's got to deal with health insurance companies, and they're always changing the rules and the pricing on them. And this dude's trying to just help kids as his business is to help a certain subset of children. Like, good work, you know? But was had like a mental, not complete mental breakdown, but had psychological trauma given his disposition and his personality and the difficulties in all these interactions. And he said that in listening to the Banking with Life podcast on a previous episode, and you know I'm not going to be able to name it, but on a previous episode, this comes right from Nelson, where he would talk about how IBC is such a peaceful way of life. I mean, this is what we're talking about. And in fact, this individual brought this up to me. He's like, you know, it clicked with me. I could see how if I did IBC, like really did it the way you guys talk about it, not as a, you know, the shiny veneer that you put over a sales pitch, but if I really thought about my finances in these terms, how much more peaceful that would be and how much more it would help me with my mental health. And this is somebody who has keenly aware of his mental health sensitivities. And what was true for him is just as true for everybody else. It just looks different for different people. Yep. And the, you know, going back to the psychological stuff, which I just am interested in, I'm not like a psychologist, but it's interesting to me. Anxiety is that feeling of failure to move towards a goal. And so if you've got this purposeless, amorphous chaos, this lack of orientation, no map, no sense of direction, all that is the same thing, that is anxiety provoking. Yep. That provokes a negative feeling, a negative emotion that we call anxiety. And so like in the talk you mentioned, and then I, in our conversation previously, got it mixed up with a talk you gave at Banking with Life. And in that Banking with Life live event in October of 24, which clients will have access to, you talked about the priority of assets for purposes of distribution or late life passive cash flow. Like, okay, you got this, because this is where it ends up, right? If I'm in this amorphous, purposeless, directionless chaos, but I'm trying to participate, I'm trying to do right by my people and be a good steward of what I earn, I'm taking the quote unquote advice or marketing pitches from people who call themselves financial professionals, I end up with this laundry list patchwork of like a grab bag of different financial products developed over time. And so I get to late in life and it's like, well, now what do I do with it? Like, what comes first? How do I put structure? How do I orient myself relative to all this jumbled crap that I've accumulated over time, trying my best, I get it, but trying to make sense, literally make sense of all this stuff I've accumulated. And your talk and going through that, you know, you have people whipping out their phones, trying to take pictures of the, it's like, huh. I mean, it produces that like awe inspiring, like, whoa, like, cause that's what, you know, when things snap together, like catching IBC or when the light bulb goes on or you have a moment of realization or it clicks or all these metaphors or different ways of talking about it. It's like, it is in some like metaphysical sense, seeing, not like visually seeing, but in your mind, in the mind's eye, seeing a structure, right? A set of relationships between these different things that previously seemed unrelated. And now there's a purpose-driven orientation, a structure to seeing it. And that to every, this is a universal phenomenon. No one can disagree with this. I don't care. This is apodictically true. For everybody, that is peaceful.
Yep.
That is like, oh, you feel the tension relax in the shoulders and it's like, oh, and yes, oh, oh. And yeah. And then all the, then you just pour it on, like all of the actual, you know, technique oriented, the quantitative, all the quantitative benefits come with that in this purpose-driven structure. So when people are like, you know, IBC, I'm going to dump all this money. Like, how could it be that people are going to put double-digit percentages of their income, eventually triple-digit percentages of income, into life insurance? Like, how could that be possible? Well, if you had this clear vision of how all of this fits together, from the philosophical to the strategic to the practical, and all that was integrated, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.